How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Moving on to the second hour here of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Our thanks to Brandon Wright. 11 years of service in the NBA. What a year. What a perspective he has on the game of basketball. I always like talking hoops with him. And as you noticed at the end, he loves talking about other sports.
He does.
Too. I mean, he is in. He is a fan. I can remember during the deep playoff runs for the Predators, I would often see Brandon in the Lexus Lounge with a very long gold jersey on. Had to get the big size, right?
He's 6'11"?
Yeah. So he was he is noticeable in the Lexus Lounge with the gold. But great perspective on Kobe Bryant, state of the game, this up-and-coming Grizzlies team, who, by the way, is now at 500. They've won, I think, 11 out of 13. They are on fire right now. Meanwhile, as we talked about at the last part of the hour, Adam Vinger will join us at the bottom of the hour to check in on the Predators and the Devils to see if the Predators can sweep these back-to-backs. That is the challenge in front of them after they won a pretty wild game last night in Washington. But as we count down to the Super Bowl, Darren, you heard him say about Patrick Mahomes. He's got a feeling like you do that it's going to be Kansas City. But you remember when John Elway first played in the Super Bowls? His first three Super Bowls, first three, were nightmares, right? His team was heavily relying on him. They didn't have a great running game. It's hard to compare eras like that. But that was his reputation for a long time, right? He went to three Super Bowls in the 80s, and they got ripped all three times.
They got
and
waxed.
He played poorly for him in all three. And then it was only his last 2 years where he had a different type of team around him that he played the way he was capable of, and they won the last two. So Mahomes, who knows? Like, then there's Dan Marino, who got to a Super Bowl very early in his career and then never went back. And it was always a shame. Like, man, it's too bad Dan Marino never got on this stage again, because he didn't play great in his one Super Bowl. So now you got Patrick Mahomes, who we all believe is going to become maybe the highest paid athlete he will become the highest paid athlete in football.
No question.
Right? There's no doubt about that, at least for a while, until the next guy comes in. I mean, who knows what Lamar Jackson will do the next couple of years or whatever, but Patrick Mahomes, I don't think nobody will bat an eye and say, well, he doesn't deserve to get this or whatever.
His first number will start with a four.
Right. But will it be affected at all by how he plays? Probably not, right? Even if he had an off game on Sunday, he still will become the highest paid guy. But there will be higher expectations, just like everybody else. And as Brandon pointed out, they're going to have to manage the salary cap with his bigger figure and still put as good a team around him as they can. And if you notice, a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who has made the big money for a long time, some years they have a really good team around him, and other years they've had kind of shaky.
Yep.
Where you kind of look around and say, well, Aaron Rodgers is fine, but who's he have? Like, is their defense good enough? Receivers,
Running game?
Running game, you just don't have enough money to address everything, right? So you really have to be smart in how you draft and how you develop players.
How many years did they go without a 100-yard rusher? Years.
Oh.
I think it was like 42 games.
Right. And the same could be said for Brady. We were just talking to Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis,
right,
and some of the tailbacks that were running the ball for the Patriots in a given year. That, you know, it's not a list of guys going to Canton by any stretch.
No.
So this is what Patrick Mahomes will probably be dealing with. And so the question might be, will they ever have as good a team as they have for this particular game? Because he doesn't make the huge money yet. The weapons that he has, even though they don't have a great running game right now. It's maybe just good enough is how I would characterize it. Just good enough to be a threat.
Well, it's not anything they're going to get a check mark for, right?
Right.
I mean, San Francisco is going to get that check mark
for sure. The Jimmy the Greek check mark? Remember they used to do that?
Oh, yeah.
That's going way back.
That is definitely going back. But like you said, it's just good enough. But I think what's interesting is the two tight ends. So we're going to have this in pick six tomorrow.
Oh.
George Kittle, Travis Kelce. It's two of the best in the league, if not the two best in the league. They probably are. They're the two best tight ends
in the league. Remind me of George Kittle and his connection to Nashville. Does he have a place here?
He lives here, right?
Yeah,
he lives here in the offseason. Why? Just because. Remember we talked to C.J. Beathard?
Right.
And he had his camp, and he said George Kittle's going to be at his camp. And he said, oh, by the way, George Kittle lives here now.
This is something I've also, as I've studied him more, is what is very impressive about him. He is, by all accounts, a tremendous blocker as well as a great pass catcher. Some of those inside the NFL features that they've done, you watch some of the blocks that he was making. He's pancaking guys.
Yep.
You know, not every tight end is a good blocker at all. And then there are some that are good blockers depending on who they're trying to block. But this guy is taking defensive linemen and just taking them out, dominating them. So that is a huge tribute to him. But until we had C.J. Beathard on the show, I didn't know that Greg Kittle or George Kittle lived here.
Well, he just moved here. That's why.
Okay.
It had just happened. Because we were trying to figure out, okay, what's the connection? Played at Iowa. What's
right. So here's a guy that also has an opportunity. Because we mentioned this probably midway through the season. Darren, the 49ers, were they 8-0? Am I remembering this right? I mean, they were piling up these tremendous scores. They were 8-0 at one point, and then they played a really tough last five, six games on their schedule. But largely, when they were going 8-0, they were not playing the spotlight games. They weren't playing to where anybody was really watching them a lot. They're out west. They're playing the late game on Sunday a lot. They didn't get the Sunday night game until later in the season. So George Kittle still, unless you drafted him on your fantasy team a couple years ago and you're like, hey, you know, this Kittle guy is pretty good. I got to get this guy in here. And then now this past year, he was one of the first tight ends taken, I'm sure, and Kelce was probably the other. But now this is a guy that's going to become more of a household name in this game. Right, I think people are going to introduce the casual fan more to George Kittle because he's a huge part of what they do, not just catching the passes, but setting up the running game that they have.
Remember, he got banged up this year. He missed a couple games. He was dealing with an injury and still had 85 catches and over 1,000 yards. This is a tight end. Was banged up, missed a couple of games, played hurt in some games, and still caught 85 balls and over 1,000 yards.
The game he played against the Ravens in the rain, do you remember the play he made in that game where just nobody could tackle him?
Yeah.
That was a great game, by the way. But, you know, slowly and steadily, he's becoming more of a star. But now here's where it goes to another level.
Well, what I like about both of them, Kelce and Kittle, they got personality too.
Yes.
Big time personality.
Emotional out there.
Well,
how would you compare these guys? This would be a good question for Floyd, but how would you? I mean, Gronk has got. There's a little Gronk in both of them, right? I mean, they're not the same. They're not quite as just humongous.
Well, they're both big guys, but not that frame.
But they get down the field too. Yeah. Like Gronk can run, but they're both guys who can. It doesn't surprise you at all if they're catching a ball 20 yards down the field.
No, they're not. They're not Gronk. Nobody's going to be Gronk. You can't compare anybody to him. But, like you said, they're both really hard to get down. I think Kelce's a little bit bigger. Kittle's, I think, 6'4". Kelce's more like 6'5", a little bit bigger frame. But still, two guys that are really, really tough to get down. They play with a lot of emotion. They love to talk. Think about what I just said about Kittle. He's had 88 catches and 85 catches the last two seasons for a tight end. You want to hear Kelce's catches the last 4 years?
Bring it.
26. We'll start at 2016 and work to this year. 85 catches, 83 catches, 103 catches last year. Of course, that was in Mahomes' MVP year. And he only had 97 catches this year. And all those, of course, over 1,000 yards. Kelce gets a lot of touchdowns. The MVP year for Mahomes, he had 10 touchdowns. But just think about that. That's a tight end. 97 catches this year for 1,229 yards.
Hmm.
And 5 touchdowns.
And with Kansas City.
And what did he have in the Texans game? 3 touchdowns, over 100 yards?
I don't remember, but yeah, he was right in the mix. It's a blur because that was a blitz. 7 straight drives with touchdowns. He certainly had his share. For Kansas City, you see a game where they're gonna throw it, right? They're going to air it out. So Kelce should get his share of targets. What's been interesting about the 49ers is how have they gotten here? They've dominated running the ball against the Vikings and the Packers. They haven't had to throw it very much. So I haven't looked at Kittle's passing stats. I'm sure he's got a few, but it's the running game that is their bread and butter. To me, those are the two biggest things is 49, I guess you could say the line of scrimmage on both sides, but 49ers running attack against the Chiefs run defense, which has been a question mark for a while, but recently they've gotten it shored up. What happens in this game? And then the 49ers pass rush, which has been awesome, and pass defense as a whole against the Chiefs passing attack. I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's got a chance to be a fantastic game.
Well, we're all hoping for that.
Well, that is what you root for. And for years, for us growing up, that wasn't the case. It was a ton of blowouts. But wouldn't you say the last 15 years, 20 years, you don't worry about that as much. There haven't been as many mismatches.
We don't even really talk about it anymore. There
have not been as many mismatches in the salary cap era, for sure.
That's all we used to talk about.
Oh, absolutely. All the time.
With the 49ers, the Redskins. I mean, they
just dominant teams.
Dominant teams just blow everybody out.
When did it, I'm trying to think of when it would have. Maybe in the 2000s is when it really started to change.
Yeah.
It was still kind of leaked into the night. Those great Cowboys teams were there. Yeah, a powerful 49ers team. By the late 90s, like the Broncos' 2 wins for Elway, those weren't blowouts, right? Favre's Packers. So it still had a little bit. That was sort of transition. And then you get into the 2000s, and for the most part, you expected a great game, and it's delivered more often than not.
Yep. We will have Adam Vingan at the bottom of the hour. He's in Newark. Of course, the Devils and the Predators tonight, 6:30 puck drop, pregame at 5:30. Everything heard right here. We're going to get into some analytics in the third hour. That's going to be a lot of fun. Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock. A lot more on tap here on Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So we got the TVs on here in the studio last night. It's post game, Willie, and I look up. One of the televisions is on. It's on NHL Network, and they're doing what is it on the fly? What is it late at night? On the fly.
Yeah, on the fly. They would be the highlight recaps.
They just showed a random tweet. And it's like, this Edmonton-Calgary game is crazy.
Yeah, they have added that, I think, this year, where they'll have a sliver of the screen that will have some tweets.
Oh, no, this was on. They put full screen. Do you know whose tweet it was? Richard Deitch.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Was it on Mike Tirico doing the game?
No, it was on the Edmonton-Calgary game.
Oh, I see.
Which all they did in the first period was fight.
Well, you kind of knew that was coming. David, believe me, when we were out in Edmonton, that had just happened. That's all they talked about. Just wait till on the other side of the bye week when they play again. Ooh, I can't wait for that. But who scored the first goal of the game? Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah.
That guy, he is the classic disturber, right?
Yes.
He doesn't, you can do anything you want to him. He just takes it. He's going to keep annoying you, and he's going to make plays. You hate him. You hate playing against him. But he's a heck of a player.
He is. I was trying to find quickly his, because I actually saw it, and then I looked up, and I was like, oh, that's the tweet I literally just saw Richard put out there. And they put it up on NHL Network. I just thought that was interesting.
Well, the reason I guessed wrong was because when Mike Tirico did, by the way, you're gonna, if you missed that yesterday, you missed one heck of an interview. We had Mike Tirico from NBC on, who called the Predators-Capitals game last night. We're going to play that again for you, because the vast majority of it is not about the Predators and the Capitals. It was referenced a couple of times, but we got into a lot of really interesting things about that, about him. And that's going to be during the noon hour. But when he first did the game last year, Richard Deitch did a long piece on him and the adjustment that an announcer makes when he goes to hockey. And he got a very in-depth article with Mike Tirico telling him who he talked to, how he put together his preparation, and he got some other NHL announcers involved. One of them, Dan Duva, is going to be coming here on Saturday, Vegas's radio guy. And they actually showed pictures. I was very interested because everybody's got their own way of putting together their study guide for the game, right? And some people put more detail than others. It's really fascinating. But Mike Tirico was absorbing all of this stuff. So that's what I was guessing. But obviously the Battle of Alberta.
My goodness.
Very spicy. So what was Richard's tweet? What did he say?
He just said, dang, this Edmonton-Calgary first period. That's all he said. And that was their tweet they showed. Pretty funny. Doug, what's up?
Hey, guys. Great show.
Thanks.
I was going to talk about the Super Bowl, but when you guys started talking hockey again, I can't help myself. So real quick, I was watching the pregame on the NHL Network before the Preds game last night, and it wasn't NBC Sports. It was actually on the NHL Network. And they had a great evaluation of what was happening with the Predators as Roman Josi brings the puck up ice, right? And they were very critical of the style the Predators have had the last couple of years, because they kept showing film of the forwards having to stop and wait as Josi's doing his thing. And he makes a Herculean task of getting it across the blue line, but nobody else is there with him. He might go around the net and all that, but they're saying that that's a really messed up system that the Preds have. That's what they were focusing on. They were also commenting.
Are you talking about when Peter Laviolette was the coach?
No, even recently. When Josi takes the puck out of behind his own goal and takes it into the other team's zone, he's saying all our forwards are kind of just stuck at the blue line waiting for him. And he takes it in, but nothing else is really happening. It's not a true offense.
But that's kind of changed under Hines. Hines is more about the forwards.
That
being,
is something they're
being
trying,
much more active.
They are trying to adjust. That is something they are trying to adjust. And the delicate part of it is, I mean, let's not forget. I mean, they can do this all day, but the Predators have won a lot of games doing it that way. Right? Let's not forget that. It hasn't gone well this year. And Josi has had a phenomenal year, right? Because he is capable of doing
what
other defensemen are not doing. Now, the question is, what's the right balance?
His numbers may get affected because, that's what I'm saying. They're actually trying to change that mentality.
Yes.
They want the forwards to be much more active in bringing the puck up.
And they want the defensemen to, you know, hit the outlet. It would be like if the center in a basketball
Brandon
game,
Brandon Wright gets the rebound.
And just starts dribbling up the court.
Right.
And that's fine.
Now they want him to get the rebound, kick it to
a
guard,
the outlet
and
pass.
Go.
Yeah, pitch it ahead.
Yep.
Head man the puck.
Real quick. So what they were saying was, look, from a pure team standpoint, you're seeing that there's very little secondary scoring with the Predators. That you're right. Hines has to fix this system so they get that depth of scoring and they become more of a team. That's what he was saying. He said there was great coaching when Lavi was first implementing all this, but it hasn't produced over the last couple of years the way that offense needs to produce. And you have a lot of good talent there that's just underperforming. So it was just good analysis, and I thought you guys may have seen it.
Yeah, believe me, it's part of the reason they made the change. There's no question.
Yep.
But that being said, you can see the dilemma, right? When you have an elite talent, a unique talent like Yossi, and then you couple him with guys like Ekholm and Ellis, creative defensemen, then why not generate a lot of offense from the backside? And the question is, can you get it all together to where you get everybody involved? Because it's not like they can't score a goal, right? They're in the top 10 in the league in goal scoring. So the whole secondary scoring thing, I don't buy that fully because they've been getting collectively enough goals. It's just, what is the optimal way? And doing it while you're getting better defensive play. So it's a fascinating
secondary
thing.
Secondary scoring has not been the problem.
Not this year.
Nope. It's actually been more of a problem that it's been happening too much.
Yeah.
I don't mean to laugh, but that's right? I mean, they you need more production out of the guys who got the big, they have the big contracts and the top six. Everybody talks about top six, top six, top six. Well, you have to get big time production from the top six. It's great that the bottom six are giving you tons of production, but you need more from the top six.
And then there's the other end of the ice, right? You need better goaltending. Like last night, Juuse Saros made some great saves, but he also, in the midst of the game, misplayed a puck behind the net. Very unfortunate play where it kicks right in front of the net.
Why did they get good position
the first goal of the goal?
Yeah,
I think Brian Boucher broke that down. I think that was a fair criticism. That was a savable play that he didn't make. He got the job done. He's had some good games this year where he hasn't had the goal support. So his teammates picked him up. But really, if you could fix one thing, I don't know if I'd be saying fix the offense. I would be saying fix the defense. Give up. You tell me I'm getting lights out goaltending?
They need more scoring. We talked about it yesterday. Coming into that game, they had scored, what, two goals basically?
Well, if you're looking at the last handful of games,
like
then
the last four games.
Well, yeah, but I'm looking at the whole season.
Well,
in terms
I told
of
you
offense.
That
they're
Monday night,
up
Matt
many goals.
Duchesne told me in the second period of intermission. He just flat out looked at me and said, look, we got to score more goals, period.
Right. But giving up less goals is a good idea, too.
Well, but if they would have given up four and only scored two, then we'd be talking about this team has got to score more. But they scored five.
Right.
By the way, they scored 11 against the Capitals this year. 11 goals in two games.
I don't know what it is about the Capitals. They
beat
the Capitals.
Eight in a row. Eight in a row.
And a lot of them, they just lit them up.
You know, they've got the same type of streak against Tampa. It's like two teams that have been really good for whatever reason, they've had their number. Remember last year?
Sure.
Look at Tampa. They beat them twice.
Sure did.
All right, let's come back. We'll bring in Adam Vingan, who covers the Predators for The Athletic. He is in Newark, New Jersey tonight. Predators and Devils. We'll talk to Adam on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let's head up to Newark tonight. Predators and Devils, 6:30 puck drop, 5:30 pregame right here on 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here in studio. Adam Vingan there from The Athletic. That's where you can find his work. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, my voice is still here, barely, but so I'm doing good as long as it's here.
That's good. You work in a medium where your voice is necessary.
It's kind of important, yeah.
Yeah.
That is a good point, Adam. Something we were talking about earlier, Mikael Granlund, does it look like maybe he's turned a corner under John Hines' system?
Did you happen to be reading The Athletic today by chance?
I read The Athletic all the time.
I wrote about that today because I feel personally, and I'd be curious for your viewpoints as well, that I feel like Mikael Granlund, perhaps more than any player on the team, appears rejuvenated by the coaching change. I think the way that he's played, especially in the last four or five games, is almost night and day from what we saw from him before John Hines took over. I just think stylistically, he did not fit with Peter Laviolette. And I think last night was a perfect example of the value that he can bring. You know, he won a puck battle behind the net to start that cycle, for lack of a better term, around the offensive zone to Yannick Weber, and then planted himself in front, tied up Michael Kempney, and did exactly what he needed to do for that puck to get in the net. And I'm very curious as to how the Predators proceed from here, because among their tradable assets on the roster, he's probably the most attractive, even though he has struggled. And if you're them and he sustains this play, do you hold on to him as sort of an own rental and hope that he can help you back into a playoff spot? Or do you realize that with their salary cap situation being what it is, it's unlikely that he's going to be able to come back next year if everything stays the same, and trade him regardless of the standings and hope that you get something back in return? So I think the next couple of weeks, you know, I look at it as, you know, tonight's game, the game against Vegas, and the four-game road trip to Western Canada. I think by the end of that road trip, David Poile needs to know what he's going to do. And I wonder if Mikhail Granlund continues to play like this, if that changes his thinking about what to do with him by February 24th.
It's a fascinating question and issue, Adam, for all the reasons you threw out there. My observation would be, I think he plays the same way every night. If you go back, he had a great game in Pittsburgh, led the comeback, had the breakthrough. This was before they made the coaching change. So it was starting to happen. And I think we did some – I think you and I both looked at some of these things early in the season when he was struggling, that the analytics looked pretty good in terms of what kind of scoring chances he would get. I like the work ethic that he always brings to the table. I think he helps you win even when he is not scoring at the clip that he had been. But I also believe that, like you said, I think mentally as much as anything else, there's a refresher. There's a new outlook with the coaching change, and maybe he's a guy that has the weight lifted off a little bit more. And now he's getting the results. So it's maybe a little bit of mix of everything, but I just think he's a guy that, regardless of the situation, is a winning player that works extremely hard, and he's sort of an untapped source, right? If he can start scoring anywhere close to the rate he had in the past, then I think they would take that in a heartbeat, and I don't know that you could trade that.
Right, and you're exactly right, Willie. The first day of the John Hines era, all of the players and even John Hines and David Poile were talking about how it's a clean slate for everybody. And I think just the way that John wants his forwards involved in the offense suits Mikhail Granlund, as well as a few other players, in terms of breaking out the puck and the way he wants the players to attack in the offensive zone. I just think that John Hines' style of play, based on what I've been able to absorb of it in the last few weeks, just seems more tailored to the way that Mikhail Granlund likes to play. And, every story you read now about, trade deadline rankings, trade tiers, whatever you want to call it, and you look at the players who could be available to deadline, Mikhail Granlund is on every single list.
Yep.
I mean, Craig Smith is too. But Mikhail Granlund is on every single list. And, if Mikhail Granlund continues to play well, but the team doesn't make up any ground, it improves his trade value and you get more from him. If he plays well and the team also plays well, as you mentioned, that's an untapped source of offense that could help them, improve their standing in the playoff race. And, teams do this from time to time. You look at Columbus, for example. It's a much different example, but they decided to stick with Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky last season, knowing that they were going to leave in free agency. It helped them get further than they ever had, but of course both of them left for nothing. That's always the risk. But if you feel that Mikhail Granlund can help you, in in a situation where this team, you know, doesn't have, you know, only has so many chances at the Stanley Cup, and you want to keep him, and that means you realize, hey, he's going to leave in the summertime. We're not going to get anything out of it. You know, if that's a risk David's willing to take, if Mikhail's playing well, then I think he'll take it.
I think you're dead on. It's going to be a very interesting thing to read. Just because, and I think they knew this when they traded for him last year and gave up Kevin Fiala, that they knew they would get to this point, right? That it was not going to be easy to sign Mikhail Granlund to the next contract because he makes a lot of money, and they knew they were going to be up against the cap some. So they've been dealing with this and thinking about this for a long, long time. So I think it's let's expand it a little further. The line last night, Adam, of Matt Duchene on the wing, Ryan Johansson in the middle, and Granlund on the other wing is a huge focal point line, right? Tell me how that line does for the next several weeks, and that's going to go a long way because those are three players that they count on heavily the way the thing is drawn up, and none of them have had great years, right? In fact, they've had well below average of what they normally have done before. So that's a really intriguing trio there.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, I've been looking into Ryan Johansson. I talked to him yesterday. You know, I talked to John Hines about him a couple of days ago. Of course, you know, he did not play very much against the Maple Leafs earlier in the week. But one thing that was interesting about Ryan's deployment so far before last night's game under John Hines is he had been starting a significantly higher portion of his five-on-five shifts in the defensive zone. And John Hines' objective is, as Ryan has talked about since he's been here, you know, I remember during the playoff run in 2017, you know, I remember how much pride Ryan Johansson took after that first-round series against Chicago in shutting down Jonathan Toews. I mean, that was something that really meant a lot to him in his career. So I know, and he knows, that he relishes those opportunities to match up against the other team's top lines. But he was playing with two more defensive-minded wingers and Cale Yarncroke and Austin Watson. I thought it was a good choice to move him with Matt Duchene and Mikhail Granlund because they're all offensive-minded. As you mentioned, they're all underperforming. And I think maybe they can all get the best out of each other. So I am very curious to see how that plays out and how long John Hines sticks with it.
Adam, Yannick Weber has now scored a goal. Jared Tenorti has now scored a goal. Pekkarinen now has a goal. How much pressure is on Dan Hamhuis to score a goal?
Well, when I wrote that story about him having the longest active goal drought in the league, which was in early November, it was at, I think, 96 games. So it's got to be in like the 120 range, 125 range by now, because I wrote that story the day after the game in Detroit. So I don't know what he has to do. You know, it would be great to see just for – I mean, I tweeted last night at the end of the first period, I've seen Pekkarinen and Jared Tenorti score goals this year, and I'm not sure which is more miraculous. I think Dan Hamhuis might actually take the cake, other than Pekkarinen, of course.
And he's had some opportunities where we thought it was going to be his goal, but some tips, late tips, took that away. So we'll see. Just having a little fun with that. Certainly we've talked about that with you. By the way, Colton Sissons, do we think there's a chance maybe he plays tonight?
I mean, John Hines said that there could be a chance when I asked him about it yesterday. He's on the trip, and he skated yesterday, and John said that he could either play tonight or maybe Saturday against the Vegas Golden Knights. So that's encouraging because he's been out for a while, since before the coaching change. He hasn't played a game under John Hines yet. And also Ryan Ellis, when I asked John yesterday, he said that Ryan skated on his own, I believe, on Tuesday, which John said in his mind was the first time he can recall Ryan skating since he was injured in the Winter Classic. He said he's progressing slowly, but he's progressing, which is a great sign that he's able to resume physical activity with the nature of his injury. They miss him dearly. So, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you always use that, you know, that phrase around this time where an injured player comes back around the trade deadline. It's like a trade deadline acquisition. You know, if Ryan Ellis can come back healthy in the stretch run, that's going to help this team tremendously.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic is with us. And another along the lines of what is John Hines trying to do to shake it up and find the right formula for this group? And you referenced this with Mykael Granlund in your article specifically about him, but I've noticed Mykael Granlund and Kyle Turris, another key guy to try to get going, they have put those guys out there on the penalty kill. And that's interesting. They have been better in that area. They did give up a power play goal last night, but it was kind of a fluky play. And they're going up against a really tough power play unit. Of course, they get a shorthanded goal in there as well. So they came out ahead on special teams last night in Washington. But that's an intriguing move, trying to get Turris and Granlund just on the ice more, get them involved in the game more.
Yeah, certainly. And it was interesting because I think he's averaged about a minute and a half of shorthanded ice time per game since the coaching change. Before the coaching change, he was averaging a whopping 4 seconds of shorthanded time per game, which is basically by accident. You weren't put out there on purpose. You were basically out there by accident. But yeah, I think that's a good thing. Cause I know John Hines' penalty kill, which if I'm not mistaken, they like to be aggressive. You know, they like the opportunity to create some shorthanded opportunities, and having Mykael Granlund and Kyle Turris, you know, who are players who can create those opportunities on the penalty kill helps. And it's good to get players involved. There are players who only play in certain situations and they end up sitting on the bench for long periods of time. Perhaps getting Mykael Granlund, you know, a minute and a half of shorthanded ice time per game helps him in other areas in terms of keeping the flow of the game and keeping him steady as well. So I think that's a smart thing by John Hines to do.
They switched last night from the four-line balanced attack to where they wanted to hit you in waves to more of the traditional, I'm going to load up the first two lines, then I'm going to have more of a checking line, but you know, not to insult Nick Bonino, Craig Smith, and Rocco Grimaldi because they've been very good all around, and then have more of what a fourth line normally looks like on a given night. With some scrappy guys that you're spotting in there and not playing as much. They've kind of gone back and forth with these two philosophies. The key is for somebody like Matt Duchene, and it was him last night, to play out of position on the wing. I'm wondering if that sticks.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I've noticed that, you know, I noticed it against the Maple Leafs. You know, the ice time, you know, among the top forwards was pretty low. Comparatively, I know Ryan Johansson played 10 and a half minutes, but I think Matt Duchene played 15 and a half, 16 minutes. Philip Forsberg played 16 or 16 and a half minutes. You know, in those situations, when you're trailing, you need to put your big guns out there more often. So I actually do think, you know, that it would be smart of John Hines to play his top guys more so than his bottom six guys. Of course, you know, the Bonino line, as it's constructed, has been one of the more productive lines that this team has had this season. So you want to make sure that you're also keeping them engaged. But I am interested. I haven't done it, but I'm planning to, looking at the disbursement of ice time by forwards over John Hines' tenure once we have a larger sample, just to see if I can notice some trends. But that I did notice that as well last night, Willie, and I think that's actually a good thing, a step in the right direction.
What do you think it'll be like tonight in the building with John Hines coaching against the team he's very familiar with? You would have to think that will be a big theme, a feeling in the building that you get.
Yeah, and you know, he spoke about it yesterday in Washington too, that you know he appreciates the New Jersey Devils for giving him the opportunity to break into the NHL. We spoke to PK Subban earlier. And he had nothing but good things to say about John Hines and the time that they spent and how he felt that John Hines would help his former teammates. So I imagine a tribute of some kind. I know that the record and the playoff appearance did not go as well as planned for John Hines. But, you know, as PK said to me earlier, you know, look how fast he got hired. I mean, that speaks to how good of a coach he is, that he wasn't unemployed for very long. So I'm sure he'll receive a warm welcome. I'm looking forward to tonight's game. I mentioned last night on Twitter that, you know, for all the talk that we've had recently about this team's lack of pushback, the fact that they didn't fold under pressure, especially after the Nick Bonino own goal and were able to come back and win against the best team in the league on the road, you know, I think that speaks volumes, and they deserve a lot of credit. But, you know, this Devils team is not very good, and you don't want to have a letdown. So tonight's game is just as important to make sure that the Predators, as I mentioned, don't have a letdown against a team that's significantly worse than the one they played yesterday.
No doubt about it. Adam, thanks for the visit, as always. Enjoy the game. We'll see you when you get back.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right, Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Come back and close out hour number two next. So I get home last night from the game, and I can't sleep, and I'm flipping through the channels, and I'd watched a lot of sports here, so I just needed a break, something to, like, settle me down, and I'm skimming through the channels, Willie, and guess what I came upon right at the beginning of the movie, which kind of ticked me off, because I'm like, oh, no.
Because then you get sucked in.
Major League.
Oh, I did notice that was on last night.
It was on. I think it was HBO or Showtime, one of them.
You know what I got sucked into? Not Major League, but I got sucked into Bull Durham a few days ago, same way. Flipped it on, and it was coming on. Oh, boy.
And then I'm like,
I can't turn it off.
Great.
It all depends on how long it's been since you watched it last time.
It's been a while for me. It's been a while.
I recently had a run of watching Major League, so I did notice it. I didn't go there because I had seen it fairly recently. But that delivers every time.
Look at the guys, the actors that are in that movie. And then I looked at the year. Do you remember the year?
That would have been like, what, 89?
89.
Yeah.
1989. Tom Berenger, Charlie Sheen.
You can't beat it.
Wesley Snipes.
That's a can't miss.
But you were telling me about one during the break, Silver Lining Playbook?
Silver Linings Playbook, because you guys were talking about something that involved a parlay.
Dagwood brought up, it was weird, he was telling a parlay story.
And there's a funny scene
said
in that.
He did a $2 parlay and lost.
About the parlay.
He's devastated. I'm like, oh, $2? Really?
But that was one of the breakout performances of Jennifer Lawrence's career, right, along with the Hunger Games, right?
Yep.
But she got a lot of critical acclaim for that. She's great in that. Bradley Cooper is fantastic in that. Robert De Niro is in it. So if you missed that somewhere in there, because I think we were recommending it to Dagwood. But you need to go back and watch that again, I think. Because
I think I saw when it first came out, and I don't remember a lot of it, so I need to watch it again.
It's got some great it's got some lines, I think, that you can carry with you for a while. You know who's got a cameo role? I wouldn't say it's a cameo. It's more than a cameo, but it's a secondary role who is awesome, is Chris Tucker in that movie. He's fabulous. He's his buddy. He's not in the movie a lot, but when he is, he makes you laugh every time.
Here's something I've been thinking about, and I want to know if I have a problem or not. And Elijah, you can weigh in too, because, you guys can be honest. When I like a movie, I have found myself, I don't know when this kind of started with me, a movie or a song. Like, when I get on kicks, now I just watch or listen over and over and over and over again, and I never get sick of it. Is that a problem? Like, is that weird?
You're saying this is a recent development of yours?
Like, when I told you that the movie Long Shot, I just recently watched it. I loved it. And so every time it's on, I watch it.
Yeah, I get that.
And I'm
with some
why
movies.
Do I keep watching a song? I hear a song I really like. I listen to it over and over and
over. Now, you got to watch out who you do that in front of, though. Because some of your friends will be like,
about.
Hey, man, you've played this like eight times. Can we
shake
it up here?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like,
That's how I am with music. I'll wear other people out because I will listen to a specific song so many times, and it'll get on people's nerves.
Well, no, it's happening at my house. That's why I'm
Like, I mean, are we talking an album?
Like, is it at least
An album of songs, or is it one song?
Like one song.
All right, what's the song? So what's the song right now?
I've been on honestly right now because it's going to be our baseball song, Carrie Underwood Champion with Ludacris.
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I know it's been out there. It's not like
it's been a couple years old,
but it's going to be something we're going to kind of implement with the team. Like, it's going to be kind of like our warm-up song.
And you're blaring it out already?
Like, yeah, I just listen to it on repeat constantly.
Oh, wow. By the time the season started, you might even be burnt out of it by then.
I know. I got to be careful. Post Malone Circles, was one.
Yeah.
I did that a lot.
Now, I'll do that with, like, the same, like, albums every now and then. Like, I've listened to Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd like 4 times this week, and I haven't done that since my first semester of college, like in 2014.
Okay.
But that, like, it's like every 3 or 4 years I'll be like, oh, I remember this album is really good, and I'll listen to it ad nauseum, and I'll play it in like the house or in my car with like friends around. They're like, dude, we've listened to the same album.
I do that a lot less than I used to. Where, growing up, I was like everybody else, you buy the album. Right, there weren't as many. You had to really work to put together a quote playlist. What we would call a playlist.
But we actually listened to the albums.
Put a tape
then.
Together. You had to sit there with all your CDs.
But
and
you
tapes.
Don't listen to albums anymore. Like,
I don't
used
do
to
it
listen
as much.
To them.
Yeah, I don't do that as much now. Like, I you could like if you have
everything's
the thing,
a jukebox now.
Yeah, so
you
that's
just pick your
that's
songs.
My routine now. Is I try to do like a new playlist every month, a mix of different things.
Like the new Halsey song. I'm getting dangerously close to, like, it's going to start being on a loop with me.
But so you don't get, don't you hit a point where you get burned out on the song?
Right, though? I move on, and I get the next one, and then I just, that's on a loop.
Just one song?
Yes.
What about a playlist?
Then I stop.
Did you ever make a mix tape or, you know?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you do that?
I have.
Make a mix. Shake it up. That way you can enjoy these songs longer.
I know, but why do I keep going back to, like, one, and I just... on a loop.
Well,
that's
maybe
what I'm
saying.
Is that a problem?
Maybe it is a problem.
I'll do that
maybe
on the same playlist. Like, I'll make a playlist. I have like 4 or 5 playlists on my phone, and I'll go to one like each day occasionally, and then there's like one song usually that will stick out, and I'll end up doing the same thing for that one, and I'll try to mix it up a bit and then go to another playlist but find one song that I'm fixated on that day and listen to it 3 or 4 times. So I understand that. I see where you're coming from on the one song thing.
I try to get a new playlist every around once a month. That's usually my thing. Because after a while, I get...
Yeah.
But I can spread it out for about that long before I get tired of that playlist and I need to make a new one.
Okay.
So one song, I couldn't do that. One song. Every now and then, a song's catchy. You play it a lot. But I try not... I don't want to get to the point where when it comes on, I don't want to hear it. Because I've just worn it out.
Lauren tells me, like, oh, really? Because I'll just hit it, do it on repeat.
Is she from? Can she help you out with this?
Well, she's like, why do you just keep listening to the same song over and
over? How about
and over
just
again?
A playlist? Just get a playlist.
That's why
get some of your hair metal songs
I'm
that you like.
You why
rotate
keep...
some ones in there that you didn't hear in a while. Put that on there with these songs that you like, and then know. You got Whammo, playlist.
I pick one,
and then you're set for at least a month, just at least a few weeks.
Burn a CD for old time's sake.
You can burn a CD.
Burn a CD. Come on. Nobody's doing that.
I don't think I've done that since I was like 9 years old, and I had my older sister would do that for me.
I burned a few CDs back in the day.
Oh yeah,
but I used to take the two tape machines, the two cassette. You take one. Somebody has bought the tape of this person. You got a blank tape. You hit the high speed dubbing, zip, 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 and now you got their album.
Yeah.
Or even better yet, more time staking, but. One song off of this tape, record it, get a CD out. What's the song you want? You get the whole thing. You program it.
That's
both sides.
Old school pirating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, that was the correct word. Willie was pirating. That's what he was doing.
Well, they sell blank tapes in the record store, so I don't, you know, okay. What are you going to do?
The feds are on their way now.
Yeah.
Well, so you can admit it to
I
a
still
crime.
Got him.
East Nashville. That's where you can find him. All right. We'll come back 3rd hour. Calvin Smith. We'll talk a little football analytics with him next.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.